So, I'm the expert for your vampire thing, huh?
They're all the rage, eh?
Oh, leather, it doesn't breathe, you know. Shoot.
Right. Well, okay, look, I know your show. I know your show is an illusion.
Yeah, fair enough.
But say I wanted to kill a vampire.
Yeah, it's all right, go on.
How would I go about doing that?
You want to know how to kill a vampire? Seriously?
Yeah, kill a vampire.
Well, let's think. Well, you got fire. Beheading. You can make him a big garlicky omelette. All go traditional. Steak through the heart. BAM!
Cool, so that stuff really works?
Well, maybe not the omelette.
Fucking tacos?
No, but
shoving shit in your face?
Look, you never eat on the podcast.
I never eat in the podcast, and I respectfully wait until everybody's done eating before I start talking.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the Nintendo Dreamcast, episode 83?
Yeah, sounds Four? Right.
84? 83? What's going on, guys? I guess I am James, Danny.
Ben.
Matt.
Ish.
Nope, we are the Nintendo Dreamcast. We got a pretty good show for you tonight. We got a lot of things. We are doing our October reboot-a-ween. Is that what the term where we're calling? Hollow reboot?
Yeah, we'll come up with something, I'm sure.
I think reboot-a-ween. It rolls off the tongue. Very easy to say.
Sure.
But each week in October, we are looking at reboots of classic horror movies and talking about them. So tonight we will be doing Fright Night, the 2011 reboot with David Tennant and the kid from Star Trek.
Anton Yelchin.
Whistle.
That was on to Anton Yelchin?
Whistle. Yep.
I had no idea.
Really?
Nuclear yeah. Whistle.
Wow.
Yeah. What else was he in? Was he in John Dies at the End or
Terminator
no?
Terminator Salvation.
What's that?
Charlie Bartlett.
Terminator Salvation.
Oh, that's right.
Is that the TV Bale? Show?
No, the Christian Bale one.
Was he a Terminator in it?
No, he played
a young
John Connor?
The guy that gets sent back in time.
John Connor?
Kyle Reese.
He played young Kyle Reese.
But, oh, okay.
Who gets saved by John Connor.
John Connor.
Nuclear West.
And then he's also in, what's the movie where he sees dead people and solves murders? Me and you watched it while on Netflix.
Oh, Odd Thomas.
Odd Thomas.
Ooh, I actually watched that. I was really drunk when I watched it, though, so I remember a little bit about it.
Yep.
Yeah, but he's in it. David Tennant.
McLovin's in it.
McLovin.
Yeah,
and of True Detective Season 2 fame.
Colin Farrell.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that later.
I could have done without McLovin. Yeah, sorry, we won't get into that now.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it later.
The girlfriend's name is Imogene Poots. I know that. That's that actress.
Didn't you look that up so you could rub one out after the movie? Shit, who is that?
I just remember seeing it on the credit rolls.
Yeah, you watch the credits so you get her name. You could look her up.
How do you think you learn people's names in movies? You watch the credits.
Use the internet like a normal person.
Yeah, I don't do it. Adder, they have to personal Mr. Skin.
They have to earn a place in my memory. So
oh, yeah.
So we'll be talking about that. What reboot are we doing next week? Are we gonna do Amityville, or do you guys not want to do that? It's got Ryan Reynolds, Green Lantern fame.
I want to watch that.
Yeah. I'd like it. I saw it in the theater, actually.
I think I've seen the reboot, but I'll have to watch the original.
Has The Omen ever been rebooted?
Yes.
Yeah, that was recent with Julia Stiles.
Yeah. Be cool to do that one, but yeah, I think we already had like five.
Yeah, I think we're booked up for Reboot-a-ween this year. We can put it on next year's Reboot-a-ween. It's like a Star Wars planet.
Reboot-a-ween 2016.
Be sure to send us some feedback if you've got a movie that is a reboot that you think we should watch instead of the ones coming up, and we'll do that instead.
And you can do that at NintendoDreamcastPodcast@gmail.com or Facebook us at Nintendo Dreamcast.
Yep. So we'll be talking about that. It's gonna be fun times. I guess we're gonna start off with what we've been playing. Ish, what have you been playing this week, man?
Really, the only thing I've played this week is games here at your store.
Tell me somebody downloaded Star Wars Battlefield beta and played it.
I have not played it.
Let's start with Matt. What have you been playing?
Star Wars beta.
All right. Hit us. This is a hot new game coming out. I haven't pre-ordered it yet, but I heard if you pre-order it, you get an early access to one of the maps. So it's going to be awkward when I buy it on release day, because I'm not going to pre-order it and everybody's playing on a map I don't have. I assume that's just what's gonna happen.
Yeah, it was super fucked up, super laggy. I kept jumping all over the place, but when it wasn't doing that, it was pretty fun.
Was it connection issues or just issues with the game itself?
You know, it may have been connection issues on my end, but I don't know, because my internet's been weird lately. But
I was watching on Twitch, I was watching some people play, and it looked pretty smooth. But they were playing on Microsoft's Xbox One.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know Xbox Live Network is just, I mean, it's a very stable platform for online gaming. It looks sharp. Like the lightsaber was just flying around.
Well, it
screen.
Would be, since everybody's on the PS4 network.
Shots fired.
No, anyway. But there's only a couple maps in the multiplayer. I guess there was like a, it didn't really say where it was, I don't think. But there was
really?
Like
all the beta footage I watched was on Hoth.
Yeah, Battle of Hoth.
They didn't say a Battle of Hoth,
I'm
pretty sure.
Was it a big snow planet?
It was a big snow planet, but Hoth. It's not necessarily Hoth.
It is the Battle of Hoth.
Only snow planet in the entire Star Wars galaxy.
Was there AT-ATs?
There were AT-ATs.
Were there snow speeders?
There were snow speeders.
Okay.
There was
and they did the little thing where they circle around.
Were there Tauntauns?
Were they trying?
I mean, those could be on any other ice planet.
Were they trying to get
the galaxy?
A power generator while the rebels were evacuating?
No, there was these beacons that you had to activate to let the Y-wings target the AT-ATs.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it was a different battle.
It was probably Hoth, but it never said it specifically that it was Hoth. At least, I don't remember it saying that.
Because, I mean, Darth Vader wasn't at Hoth, right?
He was. Have you seen Empire Strikes Back leave right now,
Not
Danny?
In, like, 10 years.
Do you remember at the end, after they're evacuated, he, like, comes in with the snowtroopers and, like, the Millennium Falcon flies away while he's, like, standing there?
I suppose.
I said, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, you run into Skywalker and Vader battling it out, and it's pretty crazy.
So you never got to control them, because you can become Mm-mm. them.
No, I didn't get to control them, or I didn't get in any vehicles either. It's just all ground troop.
Is it based on how good you are in the game to get to those things, or were you just like, I don't want to do any of that?
I don't know. I never figured out a way to get into a vehicle, so it might have been just like the developers were in the vehicles, or the vehicles may have been AI controlled. I don't know.
I saw footage of people in the vehicles and stuff.
Okay.
I saw some footage of from a stormtrooper's perspective of Darth Vader fighting Luke Skywalker, and they're just all like, there's like six stormtroopers like shooting Luke in the back, and he finally dies, and all six of them just run up together and start teabagging Luke Skywalker. I was like, yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah. My squad got wiped out by Luke Skywalker once. It was pretty terrifying. He just runs at you and like super quick and takes you all out.
With his lightsaber.
Asshole.
Yeah. So that was fun. There's another like a survivor mode that I didn't get to play, but
nice.
So I don't know. Not a whole lot to talk about it. It's Battlefield with Star Wars stuff.
I think I saw this article that they extended it, the beta, for like another week or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or get their servers locked down. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what a beta... I feel like it's less of a beta and more of a marketing thing, because I feel like you don't do a beta like 3 weeks before the game comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more of like a server load test kind of.
Because it's probably already gold, so it's got to be coming out no matter what.
It's just good marketing. Like, I can get on and preview the game.
Yeah, I mean, they call it... It's just a playtest demo sort of thing, basically.
But Yep, it was lots of fun.
Well, thanks for doing your due diligence as a game journalist, Matthew.
No problem.
Ish, what'd you play, man?
Like I was saying, mainly just games here at your store, and other than that, at home, the only thing I have played is Mass Effect 1. Mm. Trying to get the ally achievements for Caden and Liara.
Wait a minute. You don't have it for Caden?
No.
Which means you played through the game as Ashley, you horrible fucking person?
I saved Ashley, yes, instead of Caden.
Why? Why
would I did that too.
What is fuck is wrong with
Caden
you?
Caden was a whiny fuck.
Exactly. She is like, a racist, homophobe, the worst person in the game.
She is
a human pile of shit.
I don't remember her being a racist homophobe.
No.
She is exactly very racist, especially talking about like her family when she's in like the bow of the ship.
Yeah.
She talks about her family.
Horrible
stuff.
Human being.
But yeah, those are the only two. You have to play at least 60% of the entire game with them in your party.
Yeah. I had no problem getting Caden because I was like, I could save Caden who can move shit with his mind and is like nice to talk to, or I can save the like racist bitch bag.
But I don't have a lot of time for video games right now between work and...
I saved Caden too, but then I loaded my game in Mass Effect 2, and he has like the worst case of like survivor's guilt ever.
Yep.
Yeah, he's just like such a whiny baby. Yeah.
Well, you don't have to choose between him and Mass Effect 2, so you just leave him on the ship or wherever, man.
Did you play number 3 where he's the head of the security detail?
No, I mean, I have like a game that's like halfway through on it, but I never finished it.
He's a decent hard ass in 3, if he's alive, that is.
Yeah, unless you saved fucking Ashley for some weird reason.
Yep.
Oh, I did download Plague Knight, the Shovel Knight freeware expansion.
Yeah.
And I was totally wrong. It's free for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to say that. I haven't played it yet, though.
If you buy Shovel Knight now, is it still free? As long as you have the game? Or
I don't know.
Why did you say I couldn't hear you with Shovel Knight's dick in your mouth?
That would suck Shovel Knight's dick. It's the best game.
What have you been playing?
I play a little bit more of The Witcher 3 and the new game for...
I think if you play Witcher 3 5 hours a day every day for 4 years, you'll eventually get through it.
Yeah, that's about what it takes. And they're coming out with like 2 DLCs for it that's supposed to add like 10 more hours of gameplay a piece. Jeez, so
they really have nothing to do in Poland except make Witcher DLC.
Well, they're also working on some game called Cyberpunk like 2077.
Yeah,
like
but they're not talking about that game yet until 2018 or something, what they said.
Other than that, the free game for Xbox One.
No matter how far you put your face away, we can still hear you eating tacos. don't bother trying to cover it up.
Embrace the chew.
It was Valiant Hearts: The Great War. So I put like an hour of that. It's sort of like an educational game about World War One. So it was okay.
I heard it's really good.
It's just like a platformer puzzle game, sort of, where you just like walk through a war zone and...
Valiant Hearts?
Puzzle. Yeah.
Yeah, I played a bit of that.
Yeah, I played it for like an hour, and I don't know what I thought it was, but it wasn't really what I...
Is it all like hand-drawn?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, for the most part, yeah.
That seems like a game that would have a really cool soundtrack. I don't know why.
I think it uses that EA Indie Engine Create or Play, EA Play or whatever it's called. Same thing they used to make Child of Light.
Yeah.
But like you pick up... You just like go through the war zone, and there's some little storyline, but it's mostly each mission you can pause the game and read like 5 different historical facts about World War One.
Nice,
yeah. So, I mean, check that out if you're into that.
I think after I finish Mass Effect 1, I'm gonna go back and get all the audio log achievement from ODST. I'm sort of excited about that just because. You know, where you just search around, you got to find the little yellow items, and it takes.
I've probably already gotten that.
Yeah, find that, Danny. Achievement supremacist.
Well, I barely ever go out of my way to do achievements anymore. Mm-hmm. There is one instance where I did recently, though. There was a mission in The Witcher where you get an achievement if you complete this Witcher contract for something called the Woodland Spirit. And so you get the Woodland Spirit Witcher contract, and you go to this village. And apparently it's like this old Leshen, which is like a big tree demon or something that has crows that work as its slaves or as workers or minions or something. And apparently this village has been worshiping this Leshen for like the last like hundreds and hundreds of years or something. But it's recently become more like bloodthirsty than usual, and it's killing off all kinds of people in the village. So the village people are split. Half of them want to just like perform a ritual to appease the Leshen, and the other half just wants you to kill the Leshen. And I thought I would get the achievement either way, so I just appeased it. Because, I don't know. But then I didn't get the achievement, and I'm like, I looked it up, and you have to kill it. And you're like, you know what? I am a fucking witcher. I kill monsters. I don't appease them. That's true. So I just loaded my game and killed it instead.
Nice.
That's not...
You're a hard ass.
That's not the quest you do during the Bloody Baron quest, is
no,
it?
No, okay. In Skelligrad. Or Skellige. What about you, James? Playing a lot of video games recently?
No. I haven't played a single video game. I have played...
The game of a life.
Oh, I'm trying to think. I played Pokemon Omega Ruby a little bit. That's about it. Yep. So moving on. What we got in the news, guys? I was just reading about the... Speaking of Battlefront, I just read that they released the season pass info for Battlefront. $50. It gets you the first four expansions, and it gets you 2 weeks early access to each one. That is a lot of fucking early access. That seems like a bad decision in my mind.
You think they'll just get burnt out on it too quick, and then people
they're just it splits the player base.
Yeah.
So the people that do have early access are like, okay. People that don't, which I will imagine will be the majority of people, will be like, ooh. I don't know. It just seems weird. Two weeks. I could see like a week. I don't know. I guess they really want people to spend that $50.
Hmm. You gonna get it?
No. I've actually never gotten a season pass to a game before. It seems foolish to pay up front for downloadable content in the future.
I've done it I think I did it for Bioshock 2 because... At some point, they had it on sale for like 25 or 30% off or something.
I did it for Borderlands 2 and Destiny, are the two I've bought before.
I've never.
I did it for that last Resident Evil game.
Oh, yeah.
But that ended poorly for you, didn't it?
No.
No, it ended poorly for some people. They like ended up paying for it and not getting it.
Right.
That didn't happen to me.
Didn't happen to you. That's good. What else we got in the news, guys? I knew. No, I don't think I've read any news.
I don't know. Danny posted most of the stories.
Yeah, I pulled out a whole bunch of crap. There was one thing. I read this story about a stunt woman that was working on the Resident Evil movie. It was in, like, a big motorcycle accident where the motorcycle crashed into, like, some sort of staging equipment, like one of those things where that holds the overhead cameras or something like that. And it was, like, basically... it's the worst injury ever sustained by a stunt person or something like that.
No, there's no way that's possible. Like some people have been like killed.
Oh, have stunt people been killed?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know that one guy that got shot on the set of Crow or whatever, but it was like pretty severe. She was like in a coma for like 2 weeks, a whole bunch of broken bones.
I know that, that Harry Potter stunt double that broke his back, he's still crippled after doing that.
Yeah, they have insane insurance policies, and stunt doubles are the reason, like, why actors can't get insured for so much because they're like, that's so dangerous. You have to use a stunt double because we cannot afford to pay you $10 million in insurance when you die.
Yeah, they did a whole bunch of more patch changes to The Witcher, 328 of them. It's like huge fucking patch, and it's all just like minuscule stuff, but. They're obviously still dedicated to the game.
That's really cool.
Reading that Ubisoft finally dished out refunds to the Might and Magic Collector's Edition.
Oh, yeah, the Might and Magic CD.
Yeah, on the advertisement it says, like, PC, CD, DVD inside, and then there was no... physical copy of the game inside.
Nice.
And they refuse to give people refunds for it. And they're like, no, you don't understand. So they finally did.
The PS4 got a price cut in America down at $350.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think I'll actually get one this season. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like certain games, like especially like when you play them online, they're really like buggy and slow. So I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I want to get a PS4. I just feel like it might be a waste of money.
Yeah, you're probably better staying with the Xbox.
Yeah, thank you.
All the other people who aren't very good at games.
Yeah. Ouch. Now it's like I'm on Xbox Live right now. No, you're good at games, faggot.
I posted a couple of things about Destiny. Most of them aren't terribly interesting. There's a like this sleeper simulant gun that everyone was talking about like a couple of weeks ago. You can now get it. They like released a quest for it, so it wasn't
hidden.
It wasn't like super hidden secret bullshit. The things that everyone was conspiring about, but you know, people. There's always video game people that conspire about the hidden Easter egg crap. And they also there's sources saying that Destiny's going to change its DLC plan. Like, rather than putting out big expansions, they're just going to do little mission updates for free and just switch over to microtransactions.
Bungie made a release.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, press release confirmed. Yep. They're doing microtransactions for cosmetic items until Destiny 2 comes out in 2016.
2016, yeah.
And they'll be doing free, like, mission updates until then.
Yeah.
I think it's because they're have their entire team focused on, like, building Destiny 2, so they kind of left a skeleton crew behind to do these, like, small mission updates, and
yeah.
They're just funded with microtransactions. I mean, it's fine.
I mean, there's, like, you can get cosmetic icons, and in the menu now, there's a place where you can choose what, like, one of your emote buttons does. Like, it points right now.
Instead of dance, yeah.
You'll be able to buy other things instead of pointing. You could maybe, like,
jack offer off someone the a jack off symbol.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it Warcraft that had the slash actions?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, a lot of games do that nowadays.
I missed Zer this weekend. I forgot to look. Do you know what he had?
No, I haven't played Destiny since you haven't been able to get on.
I just wonder what he had.
I also, there's like a whole bunch of people talking about how the next Far Cry is going to take place in the Ice Age.
Oh, yeah. Like, I saw the trailer for like Far Cry Primal.
Arc Age game or whatever. What is that dinosaur game where I was talking about on Steam recently?
I don't know. That sounds cool. Yeah. I'd play a Far Cry Ice Age game.
Yeah. So you'd be a caveman.
It would make more sense about killing stuff to fashion items.
Yeah. A couple other stupid things, like Marvel Puzzle Quest is coming to consoles. I thought everyone would be really excited about that.
It's not going to be free to play either. It's everything's opened up.
Yeah, I know.
So I may start playing it on console.
they're going to have a way to transfer your rosters and stuff, aren't they?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
That's so ridiculous.
I hope not. I don't want all those fucking pay-to-win bastards transferring over. I would be going there to get away from them. Mm-hmm. So,
how much is the game?
$14.99. So it's not too bad. Yeah, it's a Puzzle Quest anniversary right now, and they just completely fucked it up. Like,
it's so different than last year. It's like,
like the tokens don't give you shit. Like, and like we all like tried our best like all weekend to win this like big like event that you all have to take down Galactus, and like we didn't even come close.
Nice. Like, what, out of eight times, you got them down four?
Four and a half.
Yeah.
What about, is Magic Puzzle Quest out yet?
Not yet, no. Everybody's talking about moving to that because they're so pissed about the anniversary. Because the anniversary is supposed to be like, you get tons of free shit. And
I didn't help down Galactus one time because my roster was absolute shit. But I did pull one of those from the tokens you guys gave me.
You asshole. Yeah. You got the four-star Cyclops. That's what we were trying to get.
Nice.
Yeah, let me know when you guys play Magic Puzzle Quest, because I'll jump in on
it. Yeah,
definitely. I'll start on the ground floor. I'll play that for a couple months.
Another just dumb story I found funny was there was a Minecraft player that lives in Japan showing off a new oil lighter he bought and accidentally set his house on fire while streaming. I mean, it's not terribly funny because him and like his like mom and dad or something got injured in the fire, but it's just stupid. It's just a stupid kind of stuff.
How injured?
Yeah. They also, Square Enix canceled the terrible like Deus Ex Mankind Divine pre-order.
The tiered pre-order program.
Yeah, it's like if so many people pre-order it, then you'll also get this. And like I think like the top bonus was the game would come out 4 days early or something like that. I remember seeing that and going, oh God, so dumb.
What else is in the news?
I mean, nothing new. I posted a story because there was a video game that was on Kickstarter that I actually saw while it was being Kickstartered called like Mansion Lord, where you were kind of doing a whodunit sort of locked mansion mystery, like Clue, you know, like the movie Clue. And people like really thought it looked cool, but the guy just ends up running away with the $30,000 they pitched to it.
That's horrible.
And he doesn't have like any contact information. Like he set up like a company, but it was just like a fake company. All the contact information he gave Kickstarter was completely fake and stuff like that. So it's just like another reason why I hate Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I know we harp on that a lot. Don't Kickstart stuff.
Yeah.
You just
unless you are willing to wait a really long time for it and you really believe in the developers.
It's going to take forever to come out and chances are I'd just be disappointed. That has been my experience with Kickstarter so far. Not even just with video games. Anything I've Kickstarted never comes out on the date released. Like 2 years later, I'm always like, well, it's just like $100 I'm not getting back, or like $20 I'm not getting back.
Or unless it's an awesome card game that somebody made.
Pillars of Eternity was, it was actually disappointing because the game was amazing, but it released with bugs, like bug-alicious, and I actually have not had the time now to go back and play it. I read about it, like it's bug-free, it's amazing, they've got like an expansion coming out, everything's great, but I just don't have time for it. And Windows 10 destroyed my computer, so.
Don't you guys Kickstart a lot of things and pick them up at Gen Con? Is that, seems like,
no, we never Kickstart it, we just pick the, you get
Here's the thing about Kickstarter, is it's, while it's great in some aspects, it's frowned upon in some aspects as well, because it, you go around the retailer, and so then you bring your Kickstarter game into the store, and everybody's playing it, but you didn't buy it at the store. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, some Kickstarters are now doing a thing where they have, like, retailer Kickstarters, which are really nice. So the retailer can Kickstart and get copies at a retailer price to sell in the store, which is nice. But, yeah.
That's a good idea.
The only thing, I've talked about Kickstarter in conjunction with Gen Con, just because I'm always reminded of all the terrible things I Kickstarted when I go to Gen Con, because Cryptozoic Game will be showing off Hex Shards of Fate for like the fourth year in a row without actually coming out with anything other than like a beta you can play through. And then Jasco Games this year was like pimping out, we have a Mega Man board game, but we don't have it with us. We can't sell it, or nor do we. I think they had like one demo copy.
Yeah.
So I was like, and that's something I Kickstarted like a year and a half ago. It was supposed to come out the following October.
I Kickstarted the Pillars of Eternity card game. It's supposed to come out in February, so we'll see.
And then the last thing, the one you posted, is GameStop has announced it's not going to be open on Thanksgiving.
Good on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
slightly respectable.
They are still going to have a bunch of blowout Black Friday deals, I assume, opening at midnight, but at least they're not like everyone else that's like come in at 11 a.m. on Thanksgiving.
That's one thing I'm not looking forward to, is actually like I can't really go anywhere for Thanksgiving, because I assume that as a retail store I should have some kind of Black Friday deal.
Oh, yeah, you should.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I'll line up outside your store. We'll start a trend. We'll get everybody queued up. I'll make them think something big's happening.
By like 2020... they're going to have people, there's going to be stores that like come in on Monday for our Black Friday deals.
I'll set up a tent and a chair January right outside
1st,
the door.
Black Friday.
Yep, 4 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day. I'm going to be tented right outside your door.
Well, speaking of Kickstarter games and stuff, I actually had the good fortune to meet some awesome game developers this weekend. Matt's mom was at a convention, a local convention here, and her booth was next to the game developers. Where's the, I want to see this. And they were just very nice people. We met, Ian and Susan. And I think the name of the company is Diamond Dust Dreams. I just wanted to make sure, cause I talked to them, but I forgot to ask the name of the company. But it says on the box here, Diamond Dust Dream, so I think that's the name of their company. But they had two really cool games that they showed me, and I ended up picking up, so you can pick them up here at the store. One is called Kitsune Foxes and Fools, which is a really cool game, and what drew me to it is I used to play a card game called Legend of the Five Rings. And there was a subset of one of the clans that I played, the Manus clan, that had spirits, animal spirits they summon. They're like shamans that summon animal spirits. And I was like, oh, that's Kitsune. And Ian was like, yeah, I actually started this game by making, it was a custom L5R expansion that I was making. He's like, I was making it, and then I realized no one would ever play it because, you know, it's L5R, so I decided to make my own game. And it looks really cool. And then the other game is Bad Decisions, which is actually a lot of fun. It is in the vein of Cards Against Humanity, apples to apples. It's that kind of like story-making game with cards. You have a judge. What is cool about Bad Decisions is they did a really, really cool thing. It's ages 13 and plus, but they have color-coded and put a symbol on some of the cards. So if you have certain people at your table, maybe they have had alcohol abuse problems or like weird, you know, like molesty problems and stuff, they have a symbol on the game, on the cards in the games, and you can take those out. So like, it's not awkward at the table. Like, I want to play like a cool party game, but I don't want to have cards that have rape all over them. You can actually go through and take all those cards out at the beginning. So it's very, it's a game that is as raucous as you want it to be. But I thought it would be cool. And I talked to them. I'm like, would you guys mind if we played it on the podcast? They're like, no, that'd be awesome. So I thought it'd be cool if we go a couple rounds, kind of test it out. It's a very fun storytelling game. Danny has actually read the rules, so he is going to hit us with how to play Bad Decisions. And let's go, Danny. How do we play this game?
If you ever played something like Apples to Apples or Cards Against Humanity, it's something in the same vein. Each round, there is what's called a bard, and he's telling the story, sort of.
A bard's tale.
Yes. And there's three different types of cards. There's fool cards, crisis cards, and bad decision cards. And those all go in your hand, each player's hand. And there's one more card called the story card. And it'll have some sort of sentence or a couple sentences, and it'll have a couple of blanks in there. And it'll designate whether or not in that blank you're supposed to play a fool card, a crisis card, or a bad decision card. So and it's sort of like Cards Against Humanity, except rather than any card being able to fit in any space, they've kind of separated into categories. So I'll be the bard of the first round, and we'll just kind of go over what to do. So the first one is, after blank, they blank, that's blank in a nutshell. Just to go it again, to give the categories as well. After some crisis happens, they made a bad decision, that's some fool in a nutshell.
Okay.
So there's a couple of different variants on how to play. The way they recommend it in the official rules is that the bard plays the first two blanks, and it has the other three players fill in the third blank themselves.
Oh, okay.
The third blank is a fool then?
Yes. There's a couple of other different variations, like I could choose which two blanks I want to fill in, or I only choose one blank to fill in, and then I have the other two other players fill in the other two cards. So I'm not going to read through. We have five of each type of card. I'm not going to read through them too much. I'll just pick something out real quick. So we'll just say that the story so far is, after a burglar selling stolen items back to her victims, okay, let's just change the tense a little bit. After a burglar sold stolen items back to her victims, he drove off with a motorcycle gang. And then your job is to fill in that's blank in a nutshell.
My actual card is actually how I believe that this is actually really lined up with my card really well. It's my experience with that company.
So after a burglar sold items back to her victims, then he drove off with a motorcycle gang. That's an irate tech support caller in a nutshell, NASA in a nutshell, or Sony in a nutshell. So those are the three options I have. And
no, I see why you wanted to play this. It's probably no Microsoft card, I bet.
After each player gives me the card to fill in the blank, I randomize them, look at them, and as the bard, I decide which one fits the story best or which one I like the best in the story, yeah. And I pick that card.
Like in this sense, you can say, like, when Sony came and stole all the dreams I had of my previous experiences with Final Fantasy VII and then tried to sell them back to me, like, it just fits perfectly because that's what Sony does.
So I would pick, as the bard, I would pick which one I like the most, and that player would get the point for the round. So I'll go with Sony, which I assume is James's card.
Fucking yeah,
so
that's right.
James gets the first point. And then we draw back up, so you guys would each draw a fool card.
I gave him one already.
And then I would get a one bad crisis card and one bad decision card.
And then Matt pulls the next story card.
Yes. We move, go in a, around the circle, and then Matt would do one.
Yeah, I'm going.
Or James will go.
Yeah, we're going in the other circle. All right. Whoa, it's in reverse. So it's Blink showed me the worst way to deal with, and then I play the bad decision crisis, right?
Yeah. You play the first two, then we play the last one.
Oh, is that how it goes?
Yes, yeah, so you'll play a full, then a crisis, and then we'll finish with a bad decision.
So an unethical blog journalist, in quotation marks, showed me the worst way to deal with fundamentalists limiting women's rights.
And then the rest of the sentence is,
yesterday when they blinked. So an unethical blog journalist showed me the worst way to deal with fundamentalists limiting women's rights yesterday when they showed me blank.
When they showed me yesterday,
an unethical blog journalist showed me the worst way to deal with fundamentalists limiting women's rights by showing me what? Right? Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just going to say it one more time for everybody.
No. Got it.
An unethical blog journalist showed me the worst way to deal with fundamentalists who are limiting women's rights yesterday when they showed me canceled the Ku Klux Klan rally. So somebody doesn't know how to form sentences.
It's yesterday when they canceled the Ku Klux
Whatever.
Klan rally.
Maybe I don't know how to read. Yesterday when they posed topless in the swimsuit issue, or yesterday when they threatened the wrath of Scientology. Posed topless in the swimsuit issue is the winner there. Clearly, that is the best way to handle people who are trying to limit women's rights.
And that was me.
I just gave you a handful of cards. All right, we'll go one more.
Okay.
Everybody gets a go.
All right, I'm going to supply a crisis and a bad decision. You guys are coming up with a fool. Okay, I didn't have too good of cards for this one. We'll go with this. Why did another brutal campaign of genocide in Africa mean someone was preemptively tasered an innocent earlier asked, and then you're going to put a fool that asked the question?
Well, that was just a whole shitty bunch of sentences.
Yep. The tensing on these is quite rough.
Yep.
I'll try and put it together, though.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try this again. Why did another brutal campaign of genocide in Africa mean someone preemptively tasered an innocent earlier asked an Amish youth in Rumspringa, an unnamed hacktivist, or a scientist with several PhDs? I'm going to go with an Amish youth on Rumspringa.
What's Rumspringa?
That's that little age of enlightenment that young Amish kids go through where they leave and they decide whether or not they want to return.
Yeah. Oh. They're allowed to do whatever they want, like drink, fuck.
Oh, wow.
Devil's Paradise is a really good documentary about it. Like, full of these Amish kids smoking crack. And
crack, really? Yeah. Wow, I think I would be like just hitting the Xbox.
You've clearly never been a repressed young fundamentalist child.
Yeah. With 600 cards, this has to be like the biggest game of this type.
Yeah, it's 200 for each type of fill in the blank and then 60 story cards.
Yeah, and I think what's good about it is like you definitely will not need an expansion for a long time.
Yeah.
I guess with the added fun of alcohol and a lot of people, it could be even more fun.
That's pretty cool. One thing I like is that it is age 13 and plus, and then you can further limit the age by taking out certain cards.
The cards are very wordy and kind of sort of...
They are very wordy cards. I think you have to get used. I think we're used to like Cards Against Humanity. We have to be, because they're actually pieces of a sentence. The cards themselves are not complete sentences. You're actually forming a sentence. So we read them all janky, but whatever. You get the idea. I like the game a lot. I think I can see it as a definite party game for people who are just getting into games and maybe want to try something a little bit different than Cards Against Humanity. So yeah,
that was cool.
I give it 10 burritos out of
12 pack.
Yeah. Oh, the 12 taco pack.
Eat a taco.
So it is that time to hit up Rebootoween 2015. This week we did Fright Night, like I said, 2011. Danny is going to hit us with where he tells us the entire movie, and then we're going to talk about it. So, Danny, take us. The movie opens.
We're in like some sort of suburb of Las Vegas because
Nevada.
Yeah.
Now, we did do Fright Night, the original, already.
We did. We did, that's yeah.
I remember. And it was, like, totally different setting. It was, yeah. It was, like, a little nice suburban town.
Which is they nice kind of, for a reboot. Yeah. It wasn't a shot-for-shot reboot.
They kind of pan out. And I mean, I've never been to Nevada or Las Vegas, but I just, like, it was such a depressing sort of looking area because it's, like, this really nice, like, little suburban district. Just, like, a whole bunch of houses lined up. Kind of very much like the cookie-cutter houses, like, standing next to each other. Actually kind of reminds me of Poltergeist, because that was sort of in, like, a remote area too, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of the same setting.
But it's, they pan back, and it's just surrounded by fucking desert. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, 50 houses, and then desert, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, from what I understand, Las Vegas, like, the suburbs are miserable. It's, like, 2 million degrees, and most people, like, work at night. And,
yeah, they like, that's what they said is, like, later on in the movie, they go, like, it's a perfect environment for a vampire. It's, like, most of the time, people are transient. They're all out at night. No one notices they're missing, blah, 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 blah. We'll scroll in on I don't even remember. Every time I hear his last name, all I think about
Brewster.
Is Punky Brewster.
Charlie,
that's his name. I just think Punky Brewster every time I look at him. He's like riding some little motorbike, and it's like breaking down. It's like, oh man. And that's when some like he's like checking out the neighbor, and she's like wearing a. Like yoga pants with the word lucky on the back.
Yeah.
And he cracks some joke. His mom's like, stop checking out the neighbors. And he's like, hey, she was the one that wrote pants with a word on them. I was just reading it. And, what's the girlfriend's name?
Amy, I believe.
Amy pulls up with her friends in their little green Volkswagen buggy with the hood down or something like that. It's like a stupid, ugly little car. And they all go to school, and that's where you see that he's friends with a bunch of douchebags like James Franco.
No, it's Dave Franco. It's Dave the lesser Franco. Franco. Dave Franco.
The lesser Franco.
Who is evidently married to Allison Brie from Community.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I did not know. Way to go, Dave. High five. If you listen to this, lesser Franco, high five, my friend.
Yeah.
I just always think of him as the dude from the Seth Rogen movie where they're in a frat.
All the neighbors.
Yeah.
Little known fact, when I was first thinking about podcasting, I had envisioned a YouTube series called Breakfast with Franco, which on Sundays, it would come out on Sunday mornings, and it would be me eating breakfast and talking about a James Franco movie. Never happened. I never got that one off the ground.
You can do that.
Yeah, but I would be like in a robe, like cooking breakfast, talking about a James Franco movie.
Surprise the camera says, oh, good morning.
And I envisioned that one day James Franco would, like, eventually would get so popular that he would see it, and then there would be an episode where I cooked breakfast for James Franco on Breakfast with Franco.
They'd be in matching bathrobes and flipping each other's eggs.
You Sunday only have about, Franco. Like, 12 episodes, though. He doesn't have a huge catalog.
Oh, I could stretch it. I eat breakfast pretty quickly.
Pineapple Express Part 1 and 2.
But there's a new person that's moved right in next door to Punky Brewster, and he has a big trash can in front of his house that his mom's complaining. Or not trash can, but like a big dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just been dumping concrete into it. And they're like, where's he getting all that goddamn concrete from? He's not digging a pool. But they think it's an eyesore. And he's when he's at school, like for the whole like introductory part, you keep like walking past TVs and hearing news stories about like someone tried to bite a woman at like a supermarket or something, but she got away. So like be on the lookout out there, folks. And he meets his friend at school, or I guess he used to be friends with McLovin.
Yeah,
the guy Ed.
They used to be nerd buddies.
They used to dress up in costumes.
That was
and
actually
fight each other.
Pretty funny.
That was pretty funny.
What was
what's
part?
Up, Squid Boy?
Yeah, like, it was like Squid Boy, Gladiator Man, and the Comeback Kid, or something like that. And they would like fight each other and like make home movies, and their costumes were just god awful. But he's graduated from hanging out with this nerdy guy ever since he's been hanging out with the douches, so that
he could start dating
these hot chicks.
He started hanging out with him because he started dating the hot chick.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, he started hanging out with the douchey guys because right. he's hanging. But he means he couldn't be seen with his little dorky friend anymore. But he's like, McLovin plays like his usual role. He's like a little nerdy guy, but he's in no way like passive or like submissive at all. He's like the most aggressive nerd you'll ever meet in your entire yeah. life. And he's like, you got to cut like, Jeremy hasn't shown up for, the third friend gets killed mm-hmm. in like some introductory scene at the beginning of the movie that I forgot to mention. You just like see him running upstairs and pulling like his dad's got a gun under the bed, but the gun has like a little lock over the trigger, so he has to dig the key out of his dad's pocket and unlock it. And that's when Colin Farrell just jumps on him and bites the shit out of him after he throws the bed to the side like it was a piece of paper. But he's like, you got to come. Ed's like, or McLovin's like, you got to come over and help me check on him tonight or after school. And he's like, oh, no, I don't want to. He's like, I'll show you everyone movies of you as Squid Boy. And he's like, oh, shit, fine. So, but he doesn't go to school right afterwards. He just hangs out with his girl and then shows up like 8 o'clock at night. And Ed's like fucking angry, like, shit, come on, damn, shit. And I don't even really remember what they did inside the house too much.
They go in the house and, you know, nobody is there, but it's the house you saw in the first scene of the movie yeah. where there's like blood everywhere, but it's like everything's clean. It doesn't look like there's any kind of struggle. And, you know, they kind of get in that fight and he pushes like McLovin down and leaves.
Yeah.
And then that's when,
you know. Yeah, that's when Colin Farrell shows up and he's like, I've been watching you, McLovin, just like you've been watching me. You made a mistake coming after me. And he's chasing around, playing with him. And, he like has this little like cross, but it doesn't do him any good. Colin Farrell just walks into the pool and just bites him, and you assume like it just fades to black. And then now Punky Brewster is like, oh, my friend Ed is missing now too. Like, what's going on here? And he goes over to Ed's house and goes upstairs, and he's like, he tells his parents like, can I just get a book I lent him? And they're like, oh yeah, sure. His room's right up the stairs. He's like, oh, I remember. And he just sits in front of his computer. And Ed has like the typical like nerd room, just like his entire whole. There's not a single space on the wall that isn't covered by a poster, just like taped onto the wall. He had like a Magic the Gathering poster and a couple of movie posters, and it's all dark. And he had a list of stuff you need to put in a vampire kit on a wet yellow scent steno pad. And his computer is apparently not even password protected because he just like sits down. There's like just like a folder, I guess, that said like recordings of Vampire Guy or something. Because he just double clicks on it and watches a couple of movies, and it shows him videotaping Colin Farrell, or at least outside of his house, because he doesn't actually show up in any of the videotapes. Like he's like pushing a wheelbarrow, and the wheelbarrow is just like going along, and it like tips up and dumps into the dumpster, and then his truck pulls up and the door opens and nobody comes out and the door closes. And then, Brewster's like, oh man, maybe Ed was right. And, he's like, girl is about to have sex with him. And he's like, hold on, baby. There's this girl going into this vampire's house, so we're going to have to call it a night for now. And he sneaks into the vampire's house.
Which I just want to say was an excellently well-shot scene. Like, it was very tense how they did it.
Yeah, it was really good. It was, like, really tense. He just, like, sneaks into this vampire's house while he's gone. And I don't even think he was in there, like, 10 minutes, and the guy, like, pulls back in. But he's like, oh, shit. Where do I go? And he took a couple of pictures. He took a picture of a really weird banner he saw in one of the upstairs rooms. And he opened up his closet, and the dude just has, like, uniforms for, like, all different professions, like delivery man, police officer, like, medic, like, EMT, I guess you would call it. Mm-hmm. All kinds of, like, and, I don't know. He's like, oh, this is fucked up. But then the guy comes home and he's like, I gotta find a hiding space. So he just runs into this guy's closet, and he's sitting there, and he like leans against the back wall and it pops open. He's like, what the fuck? And right past the closet, all it is just like a hallway that has like five doorways off of it, and four of them have keys in them and one doesn't. And he like opens a couple of the ones that have keys in them. They're unlocked and there's nothing in there. And then he looks in the little peephole. It was like a reverse peephole, so you can see from the outside. And it's not like a hand. They do this stupid thing where like a hand hits the glass, but it's like it stops so that you can see the full hand. Like if an actual hand was hitting a peephole, it would just go black.
Right. Yeah.
But it's the girl that came over to his house earlier, and she's like, "You gotta get me out of here." And but he has to hide because the vampire's coming his way. So he goes into one of the rooms that is vacant. Really risky, by the way. I mean, he knows the doors have locks on them.
He couldn't leave.
I know.
What was he gonna do?
I don't know. I don't know what he could have done.
Well, he didn't close the door all the way because he didn't close all the door.
But I mean, he's a vampire. All he had to do is just like bam. Key, because the key was hanging out of the door. I don't know, but the vampire doesn't notice, and he just like starts. He just opens the door to the woman's little room and starts sucking on her, and she's like, shh, like over his shoulder because like Punky Brewster's watching him, and then once he leaves, he like unlocks the door, and with his little lockpick kit, and. Like they're like sneaking through the house, and it's kind of it seems like Colin Farrell kind of knows they're sneaking around because he's like he has this look on his face like, are you fucking kidding me? There's like somebody goddamn in my house trying to steal my girl, and even when they're leaving, it just shows him like leaning up against the wall, just like watching them leave basically, and they get outside and it's daytime and like the girl's crying and she's like, oh my God, thank you so much. And then they take like two steps into the front yard and she explodes into fire in the daylight. And they're like, he's just like, the look on his face, he's like, oh.
He breaks to him in his bedroom and he's like covered in her like dust. Just looks like he's been to Fallujah.
And he's like sitting down on the bed, like staring at the floor, like, what the actual fuck, son of a bitch. And he's like, okay, I obviously need some help here. So they've shown a TV
to the
ad.
Google.
they showed a TV ad for Peter Vincent's vampire expert show.
McLovin talked about him too before he died.
Yeah. Playing live at the Hard Rock Cafe in Las Vegas. And then like when it first showed, like there was like no he wasn't talking or anything. And I thought it was going to be that Australian comedian guy with the crazy hair. You know what I'm talking about?
Yahoo Serious?
I don't know his actual name.
Yahoo, that's a good pull, man. I did not know you know that was.
The guy from
those are some movies we got to watch on the Greek. Show.
Get him to the Greek.
Oh, Russell Brand.
Russell Brand.
He's British.
Oh, is he? I thought it was Australian. Yeah.
He did look very Russell Brand.
Yeah, it looks very Russell Brand. And he goes posing as a reporter for the Sun magazine or something like that, and he's like talking to the guy, and I'm like, it doesn't sound like Russell Brand or whoever I thought it was at the time. And
then
I didn't know that. I didn't look up the credits beforehand, but he starts taking off all this makeup and stuff. I'm like, God damn, it's fucking David Tennant.
Who was brilliant in this movie, by the way.
He did a really good job.
And David Tennant's like, he sees through his ruse pretty quickly, and he's like, get the fuck out of here. And he's like, I got these pictures. And he just leaves them on the counter. And of course, David Tennant looks at them later on and then gives Punky Brewster a call. Well, I guess this is skipping ahead a little bit. But they go home, and he's like, fine. If Peter Vincent is going to help me kill a vampire, I'll just do it. I guess he doesn't try to kill him, but he's like, putting up garlic outside his window and crosses being very obvious. And then Colin Farrell like kind of like walks outside, and these little douchebag friends are sitting outside in a car smoking weed, looking up his room like, what the fuck is wrong with Punky Brewster? Like, it's that paranoia, man.
Charlie Brewster.
Yeah, I'm going to keep calling him Punky Brewster. I'm going to call Ed McLovin. If you're going to make me tell the whole story, I'm going to tell how I want, James.
All right, fine.
And like, I love how, like, one of my favorite things about this movie is, like, it's in the old one, I felt like the vampire was, like, so careful. Like, he was, like, so careful to avoid deception. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point in the movie, Colin Farrell is just like, you know what? Fuck it.
Just don't give a fuck. Yeah.
Like, this is like, a 16-year-old kid. I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. He's just, like, walks up. There's, like, it's, like, not even, like, fully nighttime yet. It was just kind of, like, twilight. And there's just two kids sitting outside in a bit in a huge suburban area on the side of the road in a car, and he just walks up to them and he taps on their window, and the guy rolls his window down, and he just grabs in, like, kills both of them in, like, plain sight.
Can I interject real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I looked it up, and evidently it even in the suburbs of Las Vegas, it always looks like it's 6 p.m. because of the like the night glow from the strip. Like, it's never, like, really fully dark. Yeah, it's really bizarre. It looks like it's always dusk, because I was like, man, why is it? And I looked it up. I was like, holy shit, yeah, there's so many, like, spotlights and everything on the strip that, you know, like, when you're in the city, you can't, like, see the star. But, yeah, it's just like that pollution. Haze of light. Oh, wow. Which I thought was really cool that they actually, like, had in the movie.
But he's like, Colin Farrell's like, can I come in? And so, like, Punky, he's like knocking on the door, like, let me in or I'll call the cops. Your son broke into my house. And then he's like, Mom, please don't let him in. He's like, fine, call the cops. And Colin Farrell's like, is that how we're going to do it? All right, let's go. He goes back to his house and he gets a shovel. And, like, Brewster's looking out the window, like, what's he doing? Oh, shit.
What the fuck is he doing?
This cannot possibly be good. And he goes into the backyard and he just starts digging in the backyard. And it's obvious that the ground is just, like, pure fucking rock. Because, like, as he's, like, digging out, like, these big chunks, it's just like, giant rocks flying up into the air.
He's just throwing, like, giant shovel holes of dirt. Yeah, I thought that was pretty well done.
And they're all looking at him like, what the hell is he doing? And then he just reaches down and pulls up this big, like, tube. And then it shows in the house, and when he pulls it, like, the stove lurches, the fireplace, like, there's a little jerk in it. And, like, the...
And he's like, I don't need an invitation if there's no fucking house.
Yeah, he's like, don't need an invitation, there's no house. And he just lights the tube on fire, and it just has this big explosion inside the house. And then they're like, we got to get out of here. So they jump into their van and start driving away. And they accidentally hit his little motorbike on the way out. And, like, Colin Farrell's about to get on it when he sees the wheels spin. He's like, ah, damn it. And so he just throws it at the car instead.
Which I thought was really good. Like, the movie's directed by the guy that directed Lars and the Real Girls, actually. But he takes a lot of stabs at, like, genre, like, norms or whatever. Like, in any other movie, like, the villain would have gone on the motorcycle and drove after him. You know, and he, like, picks up the bike and rolls it out, and you're like, oh, shit, he's about to chase him. And he looks down, and obviously,
the wheels, the like, totally bent up. Yeah.
So he just fucking throws it into a car.
But he has a truck, so he gets in the truck and just rams them from behind. They can't go very fast in this little minivan they have, apparently. Or maybe it was a full-size van. But he's, like, just running them off the road, and then he drives in front of them and just stops. And, I mean, they stop, too. You're in the middle of a fucking desert. You couldn't, like, off-road just for, like, 10 seconds to go around him or something.
I think you run the risk when you actually go off the road of, like, destroying your tires and getting stuck in the desert.
Maybe.
Because there's, like, if you get stuck out there, like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
And also, you can't go really fast off-road without spinning out and fucking up your car.
I don't know. They wouldn't have to go really fast. He just stopped and got out of his car and waited for them. I mean, he could have just gone back into his car and started chasing them again, but their plan is just stop, look at him for a second, and then just head, like wheels, like pedal to the metal, just floor it, crash into his car, and crash into him at the same time.
Well, they hit him at, like, 30 miles an hour instead of, like, 80 miles an hour, which would have killed them.
Whatever. But then he's just like, but because they hit him, he's just on the underbody of their car, digging out from underneath with this big, nasty-ass vampire hand.
Is that a fucking vampire hand? His mom's hilarious. So, like, he's, like, pushing his hand, like, through the floor. She's like, is that a fucking vampire hand?
Yeah. Even up to this point, the mom and the girlfriend don't totally believe that he's a vampire. Just some asshole that apparently has it out for a Brewster and can somehow dig through solid rock with, like, no problem whatsoever. But I think finally it's dying on him. This is a vampire. But they drive until they finally stop when he's like takes out their wheels or something, or just for some reason. And then another car just slams into the back of them, and he gets out like anyone would. He's like, "What
the
fuck?"
Did you notice who he was?
No, I didn't know who he was.
The original vampire.
Oh,
the first Fright Night.
It
was really.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yep.
He gets out. He's like, "What the hell are you doing? You're stopping in the middle of the road." It's like pitch black outside. One of your taillights is out. And then like the vampire just lifts the car up, and he's like, oh shit, I see. And he's like, okay, I'm just gonna get. And he's like slowly backs up and just like gets back into his car and like locks the door. And he's like looking up at the vampire, like, what are you gonna do now? And then of course he just like punches through the window and eats him. Just takes a big bite out of his neck. This allows the Brewster family and girlfriend to recover slightly, and they chosen get out of the car and confront the vampire. Punky Brewster has his little cross out. He's compelling him in the name of Jesus Christ our Lord, and Colin Farrell's like, oh no, that's an awfully big cross you got there. What do you got? And he just like slaps it out of his hand and it catches on fire. Luckily, his mom's a real estate agent, and they have a whole bunch of for sale signs in the back of the van, and they have really sharp points, because you got to dig them into rock-hard ground. So they stake him. He's even like, you know, when people stake you, I've been staked in the heart before, and they usually miss. The heart is right here, Punky Brewster. It's right here. Let me draw a little box on my chest for you. And but they miss, obviously, because they're stabbing from behind. And then he just starts flailing around like, very like monster-like noises.
Yeah.
And they get into the crash guy's car, and as he's driving past, he purposely bumps the van so that it falls over on top of the vampire. Doesn't slow him down too much. He like instantly heals all of those wounds, it seems like, though he was having some trouble pulling the sign out from his back, since it was like right in that part of your back where you can't quite reach, like, you know, have a hard time scratching.
He got a couple of hours reprieve because they went to the hospital, dropped off his mom, and then went back to the strip, and then went.
Well, that's when Peter Vincent calls him, because he actually looks at the picture of the vampire and he's like, I'll tell you everything I can. Come meet me in an hour. And you go to Peter Vincent's house, and he's like, he like knows everything about the vampire. He's like, it's from this tribe. They live underground. They're more accustomed to like turning people rather than just consuming them, blah, 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 blah.
And to preface, this guy is like the equivalent of like David Copperfield.
Yeah.
So he's like selling out millions of dollar shows in like Las Vegas at the Hard Rock Casino or whatever. So the dude's like loaded and evidently just gets drunk on Midori and orders stuff from eBay.
Yeah. And then he has like all this vampire and werewolf hunting crap laying around this big penthouse he has, all in display cases and shit. But of course, he is like right in the middle of it. He's like, he gets a phone call from a front desk of his penthouse building. They're like, sir, you have a delivery. And he's like, yeah, send it up. He's like, and then you can even hear the guard go like, but sir, the guy has a kind of, like, bloop, like trying to warn him about something about him. And then he's like, you get deliveries this late? And he's like, oh, yeah.
No.
Well, no.
No.
And he's like, that was an invitation in. And then he's like, it's like McLovin standing there like, what's up, motherfuckers? He's like, and he's got like a little delivery uniform in a little box. And he's like, here we go, Peter Vincent. And he just throws a box to him. And he's like, you let me like fucking die, you asshole. And then he's like, hold on. And he like answers his call. And he's like, yeah, they're here. Oh, yeah, just come on up, man. And he's like, he's really informal. He's really dispensed with the whole master thing. And there's a big fight scene between Punky Brewster and McLovin, where he's got a battle axe for a while. Peter Vincent is like absolutely terrified and just immediately bolts for his panic room. And like McLovin tries to grab him, but the panic room door is strong enough to close on his arm and completely chop it off. But they fight for a little while. He's got some good moves. He jumps around on the ceiling and crap. But eventually, he just gets a really good hit into his neck. And I guess McLovin hasn't quite gotten the regenerative powers of a full-blown vampire yet. Because, like, when they showed the vampire in the ground, like Colin Farrell, his, like, arm was all fucked up. And it was like, It was like healed within like 3 seconds. But he's like slowing down a little bit. And then Amy hits him in the face with a Morning Star or a flail, whatever you want to call that. I guess it would be a flail. I think a Morning Star is just like a mace, right?
Right. Maybe. I don't know.
It's like a spike ball.
Yeah,
on
a spike ball on a chain. And then he's kind of like slowed down. Like, and she's like, do it, do it. And he stabs him in the heart. And he's like slowly like turning to like ashes. And kind of like as he's like kind of like becomes human for a second again. He's like, it's okay. It's okay, Punky Brewster. And you know, like that.
It's okay, Punky.
But that's when Colin Farrell shows up, and there's a whole another fight scene. Amy shoots him with like silver bullets, and he's like, that's for werewolves. And she breaks a display case that had just a goblet of holy water in it, and she's like, vampires, and just throws it in his face, and he's like, the same sort of monster sounds. Doesn't finish him off, doesn't feel like it's necessary. Has to go help Punky by hitting the other vampire in the face of the Morning Star. But at that point, they like run out. How do they get rid of him?
Club scene.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. They actually do the club scene from the original one.
Yeah, they run into a club, and they get separated, and he grabs the girl, takes her back to his place.
The security guard's like, she's trying to kill my girlfriend. He's like, looks like they're just making out, buddy. And then he's like, wait, how the fuck are you in this club? You're like 16. Which is actually from the original, yeah.
And he goes back up to Peter Vincent, tries to enlist his help again, and he's like, that's when he admits that he was actually attacked by vampires when he was a little kid. His mom and dad were killed by a vampire. And I thought, like, when he started telling like the story, I was like almost thinking that like he was going to be the Brewster from the original movie or something like that. And I was like, oh, never mind. But he's like, you can have as much shit as you want, but I'm not fucking going with you.
Like, take whatever you want. I'm out.
And he gives him a little advice. Like, if you want to stake him, light him on fire first. Like, a vampire on fire isn't thinking straight.
He's like, how do I stake him if he's on fire?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
He's like, yeah, good point.
But yeah, he goes to a little hardware store, buys a whole bunch of crap, including a crossbow.
Looks like he's on his way to a school.
It's like, I'm going to hunt down a vampire. And the extra responsible hardware store owner just goes,
okay,
good for you.
Good for you, kid.
That's
sweet. Sure you are.
Yeah. Super responsible. Selling underage kids weapons. But he like gets all dressed up, and Peter Vincent actually gave him a little stake blessed by some saint. And he said, if you stab vampire with this, all of its victim, all of its like people, it turned into vampires, turned back into humans. So there, he's like, that's what I'm gonna do now. I gotta stake him so I can get my girlfriend back. And they go into his house, and they find her in the room, and Peter Vincent actually does show up, but he scares the shit out of Punky Brewster. He's like, it's like, sorry, I decided to come after all.
And he's like, I'll do anything if I'm drunk enough.
Yeah, he's like, I brought a shotgun. That's the little crosshairs on the ends. It's a cross. And they find the girl in his upstairs, or in his like little closet room again. But as he's opening the door, like a trap door opens, and she falls down. And then he's like, yep, trap door. Use them all the time in my stage show. So they open it up, jump down, and it's obvious this is where all the concrete has come from. He's like excavated a little cave underneath his house. And there you like walk around, and they find a room with a door, and they open it. And that's when the vampire drops down, knocks Peter Vincent back, and like locks Punky Brewster in the room. And he's like, she's all yours. And it's very much like the original too, where like where the vampire locked her into room as she was turning into a vampire. Mm-hmm. But she's already a vampire right now, and so she's already trying to jump on him and take a bite. He stabs her as she like goes on top of her, but it doesn't kill her, and she goes like, you missed. He's like, that's the point, or something like that, or I wasn't trying to. And he runs back into the other room where Peter Vincent is now being attacked by all the other vampires that he has spawned so far, including Franco.
The lesser
kid.
Franco.
Yeah, lesser Franco.
What I like about the whole thing is, like, so Peter Vincent shows up and he's got like a leather jacket and a shotgun. He like opens up the jacket and he's got like bandoliers and like all this badass stuff. And he just channels his best Jack Burton. Like, they get separated and then it cuts to him and he's like, the vampire's coming after him. He can't even shoot him with a shotgun. Like, he's missing.
Yeah, the vampire goes like, you've got your mother's eyes and your father's aim.
And so, like, he's freaking out, and like all the vampires come out and start attacking him, and it cuts back to Charlie Brewster, and then he comes out, and what do you see? Just Peter Vincent at the bottom of a dog pile of vampires that are just like kicking his ass, like totally the worst drunken vampire hunter ever.
And he, like,
I like that it didn't kind of like, he didn't like come in and just start like shotgunning vampires, yeah, and like Blade style kicking ass. It was like, nope, this guy is a drunk stage show magician.
Yeah. It's not like he had any experience hunting right. vampires, so yeah.
It was great. I mean, because it could definitely, like, could have went two ways. The Blade way, which would have been, like, super dumb, and then, like, the more realistic way. Really. Yep.
Yeah.
That guy is getting killed.
But the other thing, just my personal thing, is, like, he starts to save him. He starts shotgunning the ceiling so that light starts pouring in, like in the original movie at the end.
Yeah.
And it kills, like, three or four, like maybe like five of the vampires that are on top of Peter Vincent.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe this is just like my like own like completionist optimizing sort of a personality where I'm like, wasn't the point to not kill the vampires? Like, so you can stake the real one and save them all.
Oh no, no. He wasn't trying to save everybody. He just wanted to save his girlfriend.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, I feel like as long as that was the goal, he might as well get as many as he could. He's like, fuck it. I got to get him off Peter. Just kill him.
Well, he wouldn't have survived if he didn't do that, yeah, so, and then he wouldn't have been able to save anybody.
Yeah, I get it, but I was just sitting here like, oh, that's like, it's almost like people's real murder. he eventually, like, unveils his master plan to stake Colin Farrell. He has a little G-clip on a real, like, a little string or something like that.
He has like a tether. And
yeah,
like
a little tether. And he's got all the clothing he's wearing is like soaked in kerosene or something, like slightly fireproofed, but all like kerosene on the outside. And he like pulls a mask up and puts them on some goggles. And then he's like, Peter Vincent's like lighting a cigarette and he's like, you got a light?
That was a joint, bro. He was lighting up some weed.
And then, he's like, you really went with that idea.
He's like, oh shit, so you do the fire plan.
And
huh?
He just like lights Brewster on fire, and then he like just jumps at Colin Farrell and has his little G clip and just hooks it onto his belt. So Colin's trying to get away. He's like flapping around, but like Brewster's is like right there with him.
He's like riding a vampire mechanical bull.
Yeah. And it keeps slamming up against the ceiling, and it's the ceiling's starting to cave in a little bit. So Peter Vincent just takes this like one last shot at the ceiling to have it fully cave in. The light starts coming in, and then as he's like dissolving, I was like, "Oh, you're gonna miss your chance!" Luckily, the real vampire doesn't dissolve quite as fast as a fake vampire or something, because Peter Vincent has enough time to throw him the stake. And like the skin has like peeled off of the front of him, so he can actually see his beating heart. And it's like, oh, it's very easy to hit now. And he's like, and he stabs him, and you see like the evil spirit leave the other people's bodies and go back into him. And he kind of explodes into a fiery, bloody pulp. And then the lesser Franco gets up and he's like, "Oh, what a fucked up night, bro."
Dude, the fuck.
And then the Brewster and his girl have sex and Peter Vincent's penthouse.
Yeah. Well, good movie. I think as far as reboots go, it was really solid. It was entertaining. It's good to see a well-done horror comedy. Like, the horror moments in the movie are actually really tense. Like, there was some stuff I liked in the original, and I'll talk about that in a minute, that they didn't include in the reboot. But there's some scenes, like the whole scene with the girl in the closet and him like sneaking her out was super tense.
Yeah, I really like that. And it was there's nothing like that in the original.
Yeah, it was really, really, really well done. I think like they make a comment at the beginning of the movie, like where McLovin's like, "Dude, he's not this Twilight shit. He's like the fucking shark from Jaws." They did it really well. Like they really honed in on that. Like his he was just like a faceless like murder machine, you know. But I really like that. The scene that I missed the most, I think, that added a lot to the original Fright Night was the scene where they had to pay, like, Peter Vincent was super petty and they had to, like, pay him and was washed up instead of, like, successful. So they had to pay him, like, $500 to come to the guy's house and do a vampire test. And I really would have liked to have seen the vampire test done on Colin Farrell.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see David Tennant interact
with
him.
Well, that was the big difference between the two vampires is, like, the first vampire was actually interested in sort of hiding his identity.
Yeah.
And Colin Farrell was like, why? Why the fuck? Anybody that figures that out, I'll just fucking murder them.
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple things, like, I think a lot of, like, they're like, well, why did he let Brewster go when he was in his house? And I think to a certain extent, he was trying to protect himself because the night before the cops were called on the house. So yeah. He knew he couldn't just kill his next door neighbor because the cops would, you know, his mom, they would come and everything. So he lets him go because he knows that that girl is actually just going to explode and not exist anymore. So I thought that was pretty good. Yeah, David Tennant was just stellar. He definitely a different kind of Peter Vincent, but well played.
Yeah, I think the cast really helped the movie a lot. I mean, it was like I was actually surprised how many people I recognized in it.
Colin Farrell just did a really good job as like the creepy vampire neighbor.
I didn't even realize they made this movie. Was it in theaters in 2001?
Yeah, it actually got a lot of it has a fresh rating of 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is hard to do, and it won like one of the SGA awards is like best horror movie of the year or whatever. Like it was really well received. It made money at the box office.
First time I ever heard of Fright Night is when we did it as a podcast, like less than a year ago, maybe a year ago.
I mean, the original is a classic.
Yeah. I had never heard of it before we did it.
You guys know those Facebook memories that pop up every day now where it's like, check out what you posted. It's super annoying. Well, mine, pretty much the only thing I post on Facebook is pictures of Charlie and then like our episodes. So if it's ever a Monday, it'll be like, listen, and I think our 1 year episode last year was, it was either the first Young Guns movie or it was like a Busey movie. It might have been Silver Bullet.
I think it was Silver Bullet.
We definitely did Silver Bullet last October, I think.
I just had to delete that one from the feed.
Yeah.
I think the feed's like a year and ahead.
A Silver Bullet would be a movie I'd like to see rebooted, honestly.
Especially if they had Gary Busey again.
Oh, God. He'd be like, no. Dude. He'd be like, am I still in the same movie? No, it's just a different movie.
Have I traveled back in time?
Yeah. Holy shit.
I need to find a good Busey costume for the store's Halloween party.
I think it's just a indication of like modern day filming techniques, but they obviously went with like actual actors rather than like 14-year-old kids like they've always did in the 80s.
They don't do that anymore.
Now it's just 25 and 30-year-old people playing high school kids.
Yeah.
But another thing that I think the movie did real well, the reboot, is they did a really good job of there's a theme where, like, no matter how many people around or, you know, what kind of area in, like, you're isolated and alone. So even though he was, like, in the middle of the suburbs, like, there wasn't people outside, like, there wasn't, like, community going on, like, he was still alone. And when he went to Las Vegas, like, when he was, like, in the club and stuff, like, it was still, like, you got that, like, sense of isolation. Like,
well,
there
was
nobody
even
there
said,
to
like,
help me.
He's not going to kill us with all these people around. And then, Brewster's like, look at these people. Do you think any of them would notice if we died right next to them?
Yeah.
And they're all just like, woo, I'm drinking, I'm dancing. I've been so self-involved.
I've been reading a book, actually, for Rebootoween. It's Stephen King's The Dance Macabre. And he wrote an essay, turned it into a book about horror movies. And he updates it every, like, 10 years. So it's got, like, a new forward. Like, he wrote it in 1989, I think. There's a 1999 update. And then a 2010, he did an update or whatever. But it's talking about mainly what he finds scary in horror movies and what makes good horror movies. So I'll be talking about that more for our Rebootoween 2015. Yeah.
Nice.
I think that the Amityville Horror we are not going to be as satisfied with. No. If I remember correctly, I saw it in the theater, but it was, I think it came out in like 2002.
The Amityville was not good. I didn't think the Evil Dead movie was that good.
I actually liked Evil Dead. Did you guys see the reboot yet?
I have not seen the reboot yet. Evil Dead.
No. I haven't seen either of those.
I saw it in the theater, though, and it was actually... Did we have one more movie?
What is the fourth movie?
We were talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Maybe somebody
that
will write in.
That was also not good.
Maybe somebody will write in and we'll...
I'm sure we'll get one suggestion right.
I was actually... I did not expect this movie to be as good as it was. Because it's... If just judging by the other three remakes that I have seen, they were all pretty terrible.
I think, you know, like you said, they had a really good cast. And then Chris Gillespie, like he... Have you ever seen Lars and the Real Girls? It's very well done. Like, he's a legitimate director. It's kind of weird that evidently he really liked the original Fright Night. I was like, I want to direct this movie.
Yeah, you could tell. He did his own thing with it, too. Just like a shot-for-shot remake, like, I don't know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, I think.
Yeah.
It's not shot-for-shot at all, but...
Isn't it? That's what I remember hearing about it when it came out.
There's no dude with a wheelchair, for one.
Yeah, I don't remember too much. Dude, we could do The Hills Have Eyes.
I like The Hills Have Eyes a lot.
The reboot or the...
The original. I've never seen the reboot.
I think I've seen the reboot. I doubt I've seen the original.
I haven't seen the Freddy Krueger reboot, but you guys have seen it recently, right?
I haven't.
When it first came out.
Oh, yeah, I definitely have seen the Freddy Krueger reboot.
With the Friday the 13th by Michael Bay also.
I have not seen that one.
Me either. I heard it was terrible.
No, I have not seen it. I didn't even know they did that. Is it like a reboot or is it just like another Friday the 13th
movie? It is like a reboot.
Did they reboot Halloween as well?
Yeah, there was a Halloween that came out not too long ago. I don't know if it was a reboot or another one in the series.
I was about to ask which movie did Rob Zombie reboot recently?
It was the Halloween one.
Yeah.
Which one is the movie? Did it have Ja Rule in it or whatever? Where they're in like they're trying to do a reality show, and Michael Myers shows up and starts murdering people.
That might have been the Rob Zombie reboot.
Well, I don't think it was reboot because they were like, this is the house that the original Mike Myers murders were in. And then they like set up cameras and then he showed up and started killing people.
I have no idea. I don't know what you're talking about.
I think Ja Rule is in it.
Oh, that might have been like one of the...
Or Exhibit. Does it have Exhibit? I'm going to say Exhibit's in it.
Maybe that was like Halloween H2O. Or one of the...
Yeah, that might have been H2O.
It's really called H2O.
Yeah.
Halloween Water.
You don't remember that?
2009 was the last Halloween movie.
We'll look up and see if Exhibit or Ja Rule were in a Halloween movie.
So it's got to be Exhibit. There's no. Yeah.
Now I just want to watch that again.
The reboot, the Friday the 13th reboot, came out in 2009.
All right. So we got anything else for tonight?
I guess it wasn't a Halloween H2O. I don't see anything about.
Yeah, Ja Rule. There was totally. Oh no. Okay. There was a Halloween H2O, but that wasn't the one he was in.
It's called H2O because it's Halloween 20 years later, and they called it H2O.
Well, let me see who's in
it. It might be this. Halloween Resurrection has Busta Rhymes in it.
Busta Rhymes.
When did Resurrection come out? Does it say?
Oh shit!
2002.
LL Cool J is in H2O though.
Yeah, he plays the guard in the front shack. Of like the gated community.
Halloween Resurrection came out in 2002.
My favorite Busta Rhymes. Have you guys? You guys are familiar with Space Ghost Coast to Coast, right?
Yeah.
There's an episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast with Busta Rhymes, where Busta Rhymes is just high as fuck, and he doesn't understand the concept of Space Ghost Coast to Coast. So they're trying to convince, like, I've seen the, like, behind-the-scenes version of the episode, so they're trying to convince Busta Rhymes that he's in a, like, murder theater mystery. And it gets really, really weird. He's like, so the like they tell him, like, all right, imagine you're, like, in the Space Ghost studio, and somebody has smashed a gas pipe and is trying to kill everybody with a gas leak, and he's like, is that why I'm so high? So weird. He, like, murders, like, Space Ghost murders Zorak with a wrench on set. They're like, you know who did it? And he's like, what? It's just like, look up that episode. I think it's called Murder is on the Menu. Is the name of the episode. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Murder.
I watched that a little bit, but I think I was still too young to really understand what was going on.
It was a great show. I was just watching like a mini documentary and like how they got people on the show.
Yeah,
and
then, I was watching that on Adult Swim when I probably shouldn't have been watching Adult Swim.
So they'd have like the episode with Willie Nelson and an old Kentucky shark. Basically, like the actors have no idea what's going on. Brought to you by Old Kentucky Shark. Like, what do you think about Old Kentucky Shark, Willie? He's like, yeah, man, I love that shark. That shark's fucking awesome. Willie Nelson, I'm high as shit.
Did you guys see the Nickelodeon's having their
the '90s rewind?
Yeah. I'm pretty excited. I watch a lot of that.
Did you like If You're a 90s Kid? Like If You're a 90s Kid.
Salute Your Shorts. That's the only one I'm excited about.
Yeah.
I like Salute Your Shorts. Yeah. I like Hey Dude.
Yeah, Hey Dude. Yeah.
All I remember about from
Pete
Salute,
and Pete.
All I remember from Salute Your Shorts is that giraffes have black tongues.
I remember that, yeah. Yeah, yeah, the counselor.
They had the trivia show where they were supposed to win like a bunch of money, and the last question was, what color are giraffes' tongues? And the only person that knew was the camp counselor, because his family, his like school mascot back in the day was a giraffe.
With its tongue out?
Yeah, well, they had like a mascot, like a person dressed up as it, and he'd run out, and he'd open up his like big mouth, and it had like a black tongue in it.
Well, like Pete and Pete, and Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Are You Afraid of the Dark was pretty damn scary when I was a little kid.
Well, it came on at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
It did,
It was daylight outside.
It did not. It used to come on like late Saturday nights.
Yeah, they did that too.
But there was the one where like if you looked into like the flame of a candle that like dead like firefighter ghosts would come and kill you and your family or whatever it was.
I don't remember. I actually don't remember a whole lot of specific stories from Are You Afraid of the Dark. I remember there was one, like the cliche asshole genie story. Like you make a wish and he grants exactly what you say.
Yeah.
Like there's always that one person that wishes like that for everyone to admire them and they get turned into like a statue.
With everybody to love me. Cool. Well, we got anything else, guys?
I have no emails this week.
Yeah, don't forget to check out Bad Decisions. It was a pretty fun game. I'll probably play it again in the future. Check it out.
You can pick it up at Arkham House Gaming.
You can
if you live in Cincinnati.
If you live in Cincinnati.
Cool. Well.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.